Leah Stewart is in the studio with me tonight. She is the author of Body of a Girl and The Myth of You and Me. We can claim her as a Cincinnatian currently, as she teaches creative writing at the University of Cincinnati, which she's also done at Vanderbilt University and Murray State University. She is also the recipient of a National Endowment of the Arts Fellowship for 2010. And tonight we'll talk about her latest novel, which is Husband and Wife. Welcome, Leah.
Thank you.
This novel takes place largely in the thoughts of Sarah Price, the wife in the title, and really takes off in response to some fairly shocking news that she has right at the beginning of this book. So what's happening in her life?
Well, she's at a place in life where she set aside some of the dreams she had as a younger person. She wanted to be a poet, but she's got two small children and a day job. And she's the primary breadwinner for their family, although her husband, who's a fiction writer, has been fairly successful at that. And as the novel opens, he confesses to her that the book of his that's about to be published, which is called Infidelity, and which everyone expects to do very well, came out of the fact that he cheated on her. And he tells her that he loves her, that he doesn't want anything to change, and that what happens next is up to her.
And there's then comes a point. Sarah sort of goes off on a quest, we might say. She leaves for a while. We should say, very importantly, that she has a one-year-old and a three-year-old. So she's not on her quest alone by any means. It seemed to me that at the heart of the novel, tell me if this is true or not, that she's grappling with what she sums up as, in America, quotes, "We say that growing up is all about disappointment, even as we insist that anything is possible." Is that the struggle that she's having, and how does she work at it?
I think it is the struggle that she's having, and I think it's the struggle that I've seen a lot of people of my age and maybe in their 40s and, I don't know, maybe younger kids too, going through, is the fact that children here have been raised in the last several decades to believe in themselves, to believe that anything is possible. We've been told repeatedly to follow our dreams, but at the same time, only so many people can actually achieve certain dreams. And I think that that sense of earlier generations that you did what you had to do, as Sarah quotes her grandmother saying in the book, that you got a decent job and you supported your family and that was what you did and everyone knew what their role was, those things are gone, which leaves us with greater freedom, but also with greater confusion. And I think one of the things that Sarah is wrestling with, that I see a lot of people wrestling with, is if I had a dream and I don't follow it, does that mean I'm a failure, or does that mean I've just adjusted to the realities of life?
You have had some interesting jobs along the way, as many artists and writers have. And I'm wondering, now you're teaching at the university level and have done that before, but you have this wonderful fellowship. So how has that changed your life? What does that offer you? Is it the anything is possible rather than a disappointment?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the wonderful things about the NEA, of course, there's money and that gives you time to work and that's wonderful. But I think even more than that, it's so validating because it's largely a jury of your peers. Most of the people making the choice are other writers. And I was given the whole list, can only remember at the moment a couple of names, but I know Michael Chabon, who's a writer I very much admire, was on the panel choosing the fellowship recipients this year. So just to think that my work may have passed through the hands of some of those people is pretty exciting, let alone that then they chose me for the
So pragmatically,
award.
What does it mean? Do you continue teaching during that year?
Yes. I mean, I could ask for time off and support myself with the fellowship, but one of the fabulous things about UC is that we have money from the Taft family. It's called the Taft Fund, appropriately. And you can apply for year-long fellowships that relieve you of teaching to do your scholarly or creative work. So I've actually had the last year off from teaching with a Taft fellowship for several reasons. I'm going to go ahead and go back to teaching next year.
And did Husband and Wife, was that actually written during that time? Or
actually, Husband and Wife is what I got the fellowship for. It was the first something like 25 pages of Husband and Wife. It's such a long application process that you send a portion of the manuscript in asking for money to finish that manuscript. But in this case, I had finished it by the time I won the fellowship. So it's essentially supporting the next book.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, since you do teach, Is there a suggestion that you find yourself routinely applying to your writing that you share with students, something that works particularly well for you?
I think the one that I'm coming to more and more of late, and it sounds so simple, is that know what the work is about. It's very difficult to know, especially with a longer work, a novel, how to finish it. And it's incredibly difficult to know how to revise it if you don't know what it's about. And as ridiculous as that sounds, I have written whole novels without quite knowing what they were about. And I have worked with graduate students who have written whole novels and can't quite answer the question of what they're about. So to do some self-reflection and know why you're writing the thing that you're writing and what you want to say with it, once you have those things solidly in hand, it's easier to approach revision.
So when you say knowing what it's about, does that focus largely on plot or what underlies the plot or characters also?
Plot and characters, but even theme, really. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, a novel about a woman struggling with the adjustment to motherhood and what that means for her marriage, it could have been largely about gender roles, let's say. And there's some of that in my book, but more strongly, it's about identity and specifically artistic identity, because I made her an artist and I made her someone who has set aside her art to a certain degree after having a child. So once you know that it's about that, you know that at a point in the story has to confront that, that she has to either decide to set her art aside or that she has to decide to try again. And once you know really what the subject at hand is, then you have a sense of what the characters will do and therefore what will happen in the plot. So all those things go together.
Well, let's stay on the subject of writers for a moment, because there's an interesting editorial on your website and you describe some writers as, I believe, high wire artists,
uh-huh,
and others as bricklayers.
Yes.
And really this editorial comment is in part about editors. So expand on the high wire artists and bricklayers.
What I mean by high wire artists are those writers who get a long way on the force of their language and the force of the emotion behind that language. So you would say that the writer Dennis Johnson, who won the National Book Award for Tree of Smoke, he's a high wire artist. He sort of stuns you with his descriptions and with his flights of language. And
I'm thinking maybe Proust also.
Yeah, Proust is sort of a combination,
well,
I think.
Guess so. Yes.
Yeah, because he's so methodical. He's so moment by moment, this happened and that happened and then this happened. Somebody who's more of a bricklayer, which I don't mean at all as an insult. I mean it more as someone who is less of a inspiration-driven artist and more of a craftsman. Oh, Margot Livesey, who's a fabulous writer, is more of a bricklayer, and you can always see how carefully structured every one of her books are. Whereas Tree of Smoke has many, many fabulous things in it, but you would never call it carefully structured. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that a lot of students struggle to grasp is that bricklaying can be learned perhaps more readily than being a high wire artist. So there are writers who can succeed by sheer force of language and sheer force of vision, but they are uncommon.
Well, I think we'll leave it up to our listeners to decide whether you're a bricklayer, high wire artist, or some of both. I want to thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Leah Stewart. Her latest novel is Husband and Wife, and you will find more information about both at wvxu.org. Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.